honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special episode remembering Mickey Gannich, a Pearl Harbor survivor whose tireless efforts to preserve that history and share it with younger generations was an example to all of us of how to finish strong. Mickey finished his race on Earth May 4th at the age of 102. As a final tribute today, we're hearing excerpts from an interview recorded in his downtown Oakland office shortly after he turned 100. He was still driving himself there 5 days a week at that time to serve his fellow veterans.
Your ship is kind of a microcosm or an epitome of the Navy as a whole, because here the Navy's been dealt this devastating blow on December 7th, and your ship was damaged and was going to need to get retooled for the war. So you limp back here to San Francisco, and as you said, they send you up to Attu and Kiska. What was the morale or the camaraderie aboard that ship after everything you guys had been through?
It was great. People wonder we can do something to fight back. And it wasn't really till the Aleutian Islands where we really were fighting back itself. We had a little bit of something there. The morale of the United States there was so bad there that happened in April of 1942. They found a man by the name of Jimmy Doolittle. He was an aircraft colonel there. And they devised a plan there to bomb Japan there bombers would take off of an aircraft carrier, bomb Japan, continue on to China with fuels were prepared for them. They did do it, and think about how big an aircraft carrier is, 800 to 900 feet long, and then the aircraft have to take off from it. They weren't going to land on it, but they were able to take off, but they did take off and did bomb Japan. It didn't do much damage, but they did two things. They helped the morale of the United States. We're finally doing something back. It wasn't really until that time that we did something fighting back itself. All we were doing was taking a beating out there. Mm-hmm. And also, besides bombing Japan, didn't do much damage. Japan figured they better do something, so they pulled some of their planes, some of their tanks, some of their men troops back to their mainland. That meant less that we had to fight with when we took over the island. So it did those two things, help the morale of the United States. But everybody was jubilant when they heard that happened there. We're doing something. We're doing something. We'll get them. Mm-hmm. So it helped the morale of the United States. We up to that point, things were really bad, and then 2 months later, June of 1942, mm-hmm. is when they had the Battle of Midway, the turning point of the war, where 4 of the 6 aircraft carriers that Japan used for the attack on Pearl Harbor, they only had 4 of them there at the Battle of Midway, and all 4 of them were sunk, and as a result, their good pilots were gone. Mm-hmm. And that's when they got back, they're reverting back to kamikaze planes, kamikaze pilots. Planes and pilots were trained to take off but not worry too much about landing, because they're not going to land. Most of them will die for the emperor. Mm-hmm. So the Battle of Midway, and just shortly after the attack by Jimmy Doolittle's group on Japan, those two things, that was a turning point from war. From then on, we were working our way, plus the fact there that the women were furnishing us with what we needed there, we was able to replace the ships and tanks and guns and planes and everything that were lost there, we were able to replace it. Japan was unable to do that.
So you guys were up in the Aleutians while that was going on.
Yes.
And then you mentioned some of the other invasions you supported. What were your duties on the ship during all that time?
I'd start out as a lookout. Mm-hmm. But then I started getting training there for steering the ship. So I become quite an experienced steersman. In fact, they used me most of the time going in and out of port. I was a steersman, because I was the best one that they had. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was pretty good for a farm boy.
I don't think they ever taught you how to dodge torpedoes on the farm.
No. one experience that really had their invasion of the Philippines, the first invasion of the Philippines, a lady golfer at the Philippines there, who had troops on land, fighting what's going on there. Ships were in the harbor, some of them unloading troops, some of them loading supplies and different things. And I'm steering this 33,000-ton battleship, because we're at battle stations there. Steering the ship all around there, a kamikaze plane got in there. This is daytime. It hit one of the destroyers having to read. And we're all at battle stations. Your torpedoes are armed. It set off her torpedoes coming out throughout the fleet. We got the word there, reporting a torpedo coming from that destroyer. Captain says, hard right rudder, steer for it, give it a small target as you can. Now, a car goes, when it turns, it goes right around the corner. Chip kind of goes this way like it. I look, see the weight coming from that torpedo coming at it. I got to hold a bar over here, and I got the rudder over hard as I can. Hold on, here it comes. It went right underneath us. Evidently there, when the torpedo was launched off of that destroyer, the ship was tall enough, it went a little bit deeper. That's kind of scary. There's no place to run. Like you're driving the car down the street and you see a car come right at you. What are you going to do? It's kind of scary.
Yeah. So you're there bracing for impact.
Yes.
And you feel nothing.
Nothing.
And you're saying that's because this American destroyer was listing in the water and that changed the angle.
That's the only thing I can explain.
Mm-hmm. That's a close enough call for me. And did I hear correctly that you actually saw through your binoculars that famous scene with MacArthur wading ashore?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I saw him wading ashore. That's the second time he tried first, and then he got other clothes. He had one look a little bit better, so he changed clothes, and then they took the pictures of him. And instead of his clothes all messed up, he had to look sharper for wading ashore.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that invasion there, then our guns wouldn't shoot straight. They sent us back to the States. We came back to Bethlehem Steel in San Francisco, get new guns. We missed Iwo Jima and Okinawa. Mm-hmm. That's the only invasions in the North Pacific my ship missed.
So, and when you say our guns wouldn't shoot straight, because they'd been overused in the Philippines?
Yeah.
So they melted some of the barrels?
Yeah, some of the guns, we figured there they could do without us there while we came back to the States to get new guns. In fact, some of the guns we got were taken off of the USS Oklahoma. The one that rolled over inside, they took the guns off of it before they sold it for scrap there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got some of her guns there and used for ours. Hers wasn't shot there very many times there. So Iwo Jima and Okinawa was back in our hands. Next step was invasion of Japan. So this is July of 1945. We're on our way back to Okinawa, get ready with the fleet, get ready for the invasion of Japan. Something happened August 6th of 1945. They dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima. 3 days later, August 9th, they dropped an atomic bomb on Nagasaki. 3 days later, August 12th, we got in Okinawa. All the other ships are in there. We anchored in there. 8:30 that night, Japanese plane came on with its lights on. Nobody fired a shot at it. They thought it's a friendly plane. Aimed its torpedo at the coast of the big ship it saw, Battleship Pennsylvania. The living compartment of the quartermasters is back by the rudder, back by the propellers. That's where the living compartment was. Half hour before that, I went up the bridge. I was going to write a letter to one of my sisters. 8:30 at night, when that Japanese plane came in, launched that torpedo, it hit the propellers back there. Everything went in and up. The living compartment, the quartermasters, I had 26 quartermasters. I lost 20 of them that night. The next morning, Japanese asked for peace. We're trying to stay afloat. We'll sign the peace treaty in Tokyo Bay. They told us in the shallow ground, so if we sink, we'll just sink in the mud. We'll say we'll stay afloat. We got hit at Pearl Harbor, never got hit again till the night before Japanese asked for peace.
And if I'm understanding you correctly, had you not gone above to write the letter to your sister, you would have been in there where the torpedo hit.
Yeah. I forgot I had other plans for me there, too.
And in this case, those 20 men who were killed were guys you had come to know very well.
I knew him. I knew him by their first names there, and being on the ship there and knew him by their first names. They worked for me, and I knew him. And one of my jobs is to identify bodies and parts of bodies here. I hope I never have to go through something like that again, identifying by the clothing, the stencils on their clothing and names there, trying to identify them and collect their gear and send it home to their families. In fact, one of my first class, the one that was next one under me, I took his clothes back to his folks back in Wisconsin there. Mm. That was hard to do.
I can't imagine anything more difficult. I mean, what do you say in a situation like that?
And when the ship got torpedoed there at Okinawa, it sunk so far down in the back part of the ship where he could step right on the water. Four bodies were recovered that morning, first thing. And divers went down and pulled the guys over close. I grabbed a hold of one guy's arm and I pulled his arm back out of his socket. That's awfully hard to do.
And when it's so close to the end of the war,
yeah,
how should those guys be remembered all these years later?
By treating each other like they treated you. They were alive, we had treated each other respectfully, lovingly, try to be friends with everybody. I think with them, that would be a plus if the people would know it.
You know, and I've talked to so many veterans for whom VJ Day was a day of celebration, and they were excited. Here, the war is finally over. But it sounds like for your ship, that must have been bittersweet considering what had just happened.
Yeah. They told us to Guam, which is the war's over. They already signed it. We're still sitting there. And they told us to Guam there. And during the period from Okinawa to Guam, because the floating dry dock down there, they told us that three tugs pulled us there because we didn't have any power at that time. So the war was, the peace treaty was being signed. We got in Guam, put us in a floating dry dock and recovered many we can of the bodies and all. And we got patched up and they sent us back to the States. The war is over. They sent back to the States. We got about 300-400 miles east of Guam. Well, we had to, when the torpedo hit, it wiped out the propellers on the right side. One on the left side was good and one was not so good. About 300-400 miles east of Guam there, we started having problems with the propeller. So we stopped the ship. We were all by ourselves. The war is over there, and everybody else went in their different directions there. We stopped the ship, put divers over the side, see what they could do. Because in all big ships, you have divers. We put divers over the side, see what they can do with that propeller. Meantime, sharks were attracted by parts of bodies that are still on the ship there. We pulled the divers out of the water, put boats in the water with the Marines here with rifles to keep the sharks away from the divers so they could work on the propeller. So we came back to the States by ourselves with one propeller out of four.
What was it like to make it back to the States after the war was over?
Quite a relief. Now we can get back to normal if we can. Think about what happened there and think about the future, what's going to happen.
Did you think about getting out of the Navy?
No, because I decided to make it a career of the Navy before I even joined. One of the guys that I talked to that I respected said, if you're going to go just for a short time, you're wasting your time. In fact, I passed up two people in my gang because they spend their time in the bars. I spent my time there studying and I passed them up. I joined the Navy January 21st of 1941. I made Chief Petty Officer March 1st of 1945. I made the best use of my time.
Another thing Mickey enjoyed talking about, Operation Crossroads, the atomic bomb tests at Bikini Atoll, where one of his duties before and after detonation involved some of the animals that researchers were using to try to gauge the effects of radiation.
Now they wanted to know where I would put all the animals. I had to go back on the ship to show them where I put all the animals. After I showed them where it was, It said, throw away your clothes and take a good shower. Your clothes are radioactive. It must not affect me too much because I got 13 grandchildren, 18 great-grandchildren, 9 great-great-grandchildren. I'm Atomic Man. I just don't have $6 million that's supposed to go, that's supposed to go with it there. So
what did you ever see or hear of any of the results of what happened to the animals or what they learned?
I found out there. Some of the white mice had little ones. Evidently, the atomic bomb must have inspired them to produce there, because that's what I found out later.
Uh-huh.
And also, they towed the Pennsylvania to Kwajalein, which is back towards the Hawaiian Islands itself.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to wash it off in 1948. Almost 2 years later, it was still radioactive. They pulled it outside the harbor. Pull the plugs, it would not sink, they end up torpedoing it. It's the bottom of the ocean off of Kwajalein right now. It's still radioactive. It wasn't too radioactive for me to go on it and show them where to put all the animals there. But
so you put in 22 years in the Navy.
Well, over 22 and a half, so I got credit for, that's why I say 23, because I get credit for 23.
My apologies, 23 years. When you look back on it now, what are the things that give you the most pride or satisfaction?
Pride that I was able to learn something new, because steering a ship is not like working on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned the discipline. Discipline helps people. I think the problem that we have nowadays, the kids are not accountable for their own action. If they do something wrong, the father and mother or the relatives bail them out of what they're doing, so they don't learn. They don't learn by experience, and they're not accountable for their own action. If they do something wrong, you'll blame it on somebody else there, so they don't learn by experience. If they would learn by experience, if they make a mistake next time, no better. The country and the world would be better off. That's mm-hmm. why I teach them in schools there. Be accountable for their own action. Don't be afraid to make a mistake. This country is founded on mistakes, and people do something that didn't work, or they improve it, and improve better there, and they learn. But the main thing is for the kids to be accountable for their own actions. That's what I think the biggest problem we have through the world there. Because I was helped many times while I was in the service. So I learned there that you help each other and they help you. So that's why I dedicated myself to get in these organizations, be a part. I didn't want to be just a card-carrying member. I want to be a part of them. If I'm going to be in it, I want to be a part of them. That's why I get active in there. Commander of this chapter there for quite a few years there, and I was a treasurer, and then the chaplain there, and everything else there. But I wanted to help the veterans because they helped me, and I want to do my part to help them. I figure that's part of God's plan.
I guess the last thing I should address with you is, because you do this so often, because you talk about this, because you tell the story, and you know that 2,400 died on December 7th and 406,000 died in World War II, how should those people be remembered? What is their significance all these years later?
Well, I figure by helping other veterans.
That's your tribute to them?
Yes. That's why I got involved in all this, because I figured that would be meaningful to them to know that I'm helping ones that are still with us. People say, thank you for your service. We never figured out the comeback. What to say? Sometimes I'd say thank you, but that doesn't. They're thanking me, and I'm thanking them, and that doesn't work out. So we got, whenever they say thank you for service, it's going to say you were worth it.
Mm.
You were worth it.
What a powerful example in the life of Mickey Ganich, who left us May the 4th at age 102. Again, if you would like to send a card to his wonderful wife, Barbara, I have that mailing address posted for you at hometownheroesradio.com. One more thing before we sign off today. The Honor Flight Network is back up and running all across our country, and that includes the Central Valley of California, where I live. Central Valley Honor Flight's 21st mission will be coming home May the 18th. That's a Wednesday evening. If you've never been there to welcome home these veterans, we would love to see you there. 66 veterans spanning from World War II through the Korean War and Vietnam War. They'll all be coming back to Central California May the 18th at the Fresno Yosemite International Airport. Be there by 5 or 5:30 and you won't regret it. Thanks again for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more of something Mickey Gannich always made sure to remind everyone he met. Freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.